This weekend, the Lansing Symphony welcomes one of the great violinists on the current scene to the Wharton Center. Current stage Jamie Paisley spoke with the fiddler Rachel Barton Pine and maestro Timothy Muffet about this Saturday's concert. Hi, Jamie.
Hey there. Happy Tuesday to you. Cold Tuesday as
well. Thank you.
It was a really great pleasure to talk to Rachel Barton Pine about her selection for this weekend's Lansing Symphony concert, The Scottish Fantasy by Max Bruch, a work she clearly adores. However, Maestro Timothy Muffet also has plenty to say about the other two works on the concert, Dvorak's Eighth Symphony, as well as the King Lear Overture by Berlioz, which, get this, ready, came to his mind while he was on his way to Paris to assassinate his ex-fiancée and her mother.
Those were the days.
I know, right? It does sound like a soap opera, but no, it's a true story from the real life of Hector Berlioz.
Right. It's real life, and it's funny how sometimes when I read about that specific anecdote, it's just almost tossed in there as an afterthought that, oh, yes, he wrote this while he was on his way to assassinate his fiancée, you know, as if he was stopping to have lunch or something. And Berlioz, we hear this in his music, was just a very unusual individual in many ways, clearly, and idiosyncratic both as a composer and musician and as a human being. And so any story involving Berlioz is going to have some level of human interest. Fortunately, he gave up on his plans to follow through with that task and came back to writing this piece of music.
Joining the Berlioz King Lear Overture on this weekend's Lansing Symphony Concert is another romantic work, the Eighth Symphony of Antonín Dvořák.
You know, this program is a real feast of romanticism, and it's kind of looking at three very different facets of the Romantic era in music. There's a great connection between all these composers, and in this symphony, I almost feel like in looking at all of his symphonies, this is the one where he really found his own voice in the symphonic genre. When we hear, for example, the Sixth Symphony, it's just so strongly aligned with the music of Brahms. It's still brilliant and beautiful and you know, has that great Fourierante in it, so it's still Dvorak, but you feel that strong shadow of Brahms. And in the Seventh Symphony, we feel the strong influence of Wagner. And then in the New World Symphony was that's just a completely different thing, really, in looking at the symphonic output of Dvorak. And so here we have the Eighth, which to me is where everything really came together. And Dvorak's Bohemian roots speak clearly in this piece, but not to the point where that's what it's about. There's a certain purity of expression in this piece that I think is one of the reasons it's so appealing.
The center of Saturday's Lansing Symphony Concert, being led by Maestro Timothy Muffet, is a selection performed by one of the great violinists of the upcoming generation, the Chicago native Rachel Barton Pine.
Rachel is one of those musicians that I've been following for years and years, and she's had an extraordinary career. She's someone that's been, you know, on our wish list here with the Lansing Symphony for quite some time, and so we're just very excited that the stars aligned and we could get her signed up.
As for the piece Rachel Barton Pine will be playing, well, it's an odd amalgam of late Romantic era Europe, and was written by a German dedicated to a Spanish violinist and has the title of Scottish Fantasy. So how exactly would Scotland enter into this work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the Brooks Scottish Fantasy is such a wonderful example of music being a universal language and bringing cultures together. In fact, Max Bruch, the German composer, loved Scots tunes, claims to have collected over 800 of them, though he didn't finally visit Scotland until subsequent to his composition of this great masterpiece. The Spanish violinist, Pablo de Sarasate, actually spent a great deal of his time touring in the British Isles as well as all around Europe. Europe. And he visited Scotland quite frequently. Not only visited Scotland, but clearly absorbed the music that was in the air, the folk music and fiddle music. He, Sarasate himself, actually composed a medley of jigs and reels and struts, days and things for violin and orchestra, much earthier than Brooke's sort of elevated art music treatment in his Scottish Fantasy. And so the fact that Brooke wrote this piece for him, Brooke would have known that he was writing for a violinist who knew the Scottish fiddle style in his ear. And having done Scottish fiddling myself for more than a decade, when I play this concerto, I sort of allow myself to bring the inflections and the ornaments and all the sort of Gaelicisms, as you might call it, to the interpretation, so that it's not sort of square how you might interpret the rhythms that you see on the page in a more Germanic style, but that you give it a little bit of lilt, you give it some little snap.
The instrument Rachel Barton Pine will snap with, performing with the Lansing Symphony this weekend, is certainly a historic one. It's a Guarneri violin, created in 1742 with a very specific name.
Exposini ex soldat, as it's called. Each of these instruments of that renown has a name attached to it, which is usually a former owner or player. And in this case, Marie Soldat was a protege of Brahms, who actually selected the instrument for her. So it's amazing to play an instrument whose voice the great Brahms selected, and an instrument that was associated with a powerful woman player from the past. But it's really particularly cool because Guarneri was also the maker of Paganini's violin, and Paganini's violin also hails from that same year, 1742. So it's just a real powerhouse of an instrument, and just a gorgeous fiddle that allows me to do everything I could possibly imagine and even inspires me to come up with things that I might not have even thought of.
As a child performer herself, Rachel Barton Pine greatly believes in the need to support talented at-risk youth and has established her own foundation to seek out and aid the talented musicians of the next generation.
We don't select or discriminate against young artists based on national origin, ethnicity, race, gender, etc. We basically select the best players who have the dream of building a life in music and who are also very financially challenged. You know, we've supported more than 70 young artists at this point, as well as our international program, which brings basic instrument supplies to countries in Africa and the Caribbean, etc. We've worked with young people in Haiti most recently, and we're working, of course, on our curriculum of music by composers of African descent from through the centuries and around the world to bring that neglected and wonderful repertoire to students of all races and ethnicities, and, of course, to particularly inspire minority students who might not realize that they have such an important part of classical music history as part of their heritage. You know, people don't realize that there were all black orchestras in America in the 19th century, kind of the equivalent of the Negro baseball leagues. People don't realize that Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass were enthusiastic amateur violinists. There are so many untold stories that really are very important in terms of, you know, helping students feel like, you know, they're not playing somebody else's music, but this is their music too, because that's really where our future lies, is to get as many talented youth from all walks of life involved in classical as we possibly can, because they each bring their own unique voice to it.
Rachel Barton Pine, guest violinist with the Lansing Symphony Orchestra, and maestro Timothy Moffett for this Saturday's all-romantic concert at the Wharton Center. You can find tickets and more information at lansingsymphony.org. For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.